where we come from. Thinking of Germany at night just puts our thought of sleep to flight. Heinrich Heine in Paris. Sleep doesn't flee me. I do not stir at night. I chose my exile far from the news, far from immigrant citizens murdered, their killers concealed by the Secret Service in Germany in the 21st century, while police searched the victims' homes, suspecting Turkish wives and brothers were in fact neo-Nazis had raged, extremists, radicals, as they are labeled by civil servants who are much more moderate racists. I chose my exile well, far from the news, from refugees sleeping on worn-out mattresses in an abandoned school in Kreuzberg, surrounded by artists, tourists, Turkish shop owners, teachers, the whole crowd of those who let their pit bulls shit on the sidewalk, and those who pick up their golden retrievers' droppings with plastic bags always to throw them in trash bins, overflowing with empty bottles and wet-sucked joints. There in a school they try to winter, stranded from warmer climates and steaming battlefields. Arranging on ramshackle shelves the one photograph they saved through desert storms and breaking waves. Outside the door, protest marches against asylum go on. And counter-protests. Politicians argue which party does the best job at feeding them with ration cards. And at attempting to deport them back to where they come from. The old song of hunger and persecution and the threat of being drafted to kill their neighbors, classmates, and brothers. Well, all cousins in Africa are called brothers. Close friends even are. But I tell you, each brother is a brother. My exile is safe and far from my brothers, far from where I come from and they are now. While Heine shivered in Paris, too close to that fire of cold, I went further up and, crossing Jordan, settled in the middle of heat. My host's feet are red, still burning from their own flight from my country and within daily Middle East threat. The Cave at Makeda, Joshua 10. They had been kings. They had heard about don't be afraid and discouraged. It was not meant for them. They had hurried to a hiding place, hearing be determined and confident was taking over. They crouched in a cave. They counted the cities they lost through the histories of other nations. Stories recounted by neighbors now turned against them. Mighty rulers, they had run off the battle, all lost, men and mountains. The last thing they tried was to rescue themselves. Big stones and guards closed them in, refugees whose hiding place was turned into a prison. Then the cave opened. Their necks were broken, refugees whose hiding place turned into a grave. The cave at Makeda was no asylum, no custody pending deportation. It didn't issue a permit to leave, to see the family and come back to the silent shade of the rock. It didn't prepare the inmates for travel in the back row of a plane, handcuffed and, if necessary, gagged for sound return to safe haven. Safe haven, a city like Hebron, burned down and rebuilt. They were kings and had not learned to resign before battle, to trick their way into life like Gibeon, or to survive in a desert with nowhere to go. They would have died anyway from starvation or hunted down by a lion searching for water, stung by a snake that made its way into the cave. They would have died anyway, without jobs, without money to buy a theater ticket, in dry affairs with desperate women, slowly, slowly forgetting the children they left in a country called home. Their hiding place had turned into a prison, a new battlefield, and there was no other way, deportation or not, to get out of this cell than to make it their grave. Paris. Heine, from his exile, continued to write about German politics, even in his sickbed, the mattress grave, as he called it. The European non-reaction to the 1840 Damascus affair, an incident of blood libel and persecution, caused him to publish his unfinished novel, The Rabbi of Bacharach, about anti-Semitism in the Middle Ages. The most romantic place for an exile. Paralyzed by the news and my mother tongue's self-defense, cutting out, cutting in even beyond the borders. The most romantic place to get away from the we and say you. To write them and spell you. I am not far enough, and still I am trembling with those who search you out to find their luck and kiss you awake. But you hide behind your thorns along withered roses. You don't receive visitors. You make everybody a traveler, living from takeaway jobs and takeaway beds, singing Zigeuner music for your prancing parties, sacrificing their name for your schnitzel and gravy. You make everyone a camper outside of your boroughs, and then you call them gypsies, wandering Jew. Damascus is everywhere, and most of all places it's here, in the yellowing dog ears of my poems from Paris. Damascus, once chasing its Jews for blood libel, now kills its Arab fathers and children. It sends on a refugee trail its mothers and grandfathers, and you, in Paris, you take them aside, not in, the princes, the fiddlers, the scullery boys, and send them to work. Not a second of rest. The wandering Jew, that's me, throwing up from the smell of your dishes served to the outcast. The poets, prophets without a church to tell that you, burning books now, will burn people later. And you, east of Damascus and Paris, will grind to dirt under uprising boots the epics of the Nibelungen, the Buddhas of Bamiyan, the holy shrines of Timbuktu, for a future erected on that very dirt, fleeting as the smell of the meat simmering under the lids of your pots. Who dares tell us why we can go and when? Who tells us where? The wandering Jew, that's me, with the chutzpah to write down your recipes from my mattress grave. Listening to the groans of your guests, watching from my romantic exile, a bed without legs. Tel Aviv, March 2014. Here's the place out of sorrow. The partying never stops. Everyone drags a queen along with him as if the lots of Purim were cast every night. This place is far from the world newsstands for me. My Ivrit stumbles over the headlines. A plane got lost in the east, a boat sank in the north, scientists run for the black box, the boat doesn't have any. Everything there, everyone, his own black box, tracked down by forensics to keep the boats off the shores, while planes land softly with neatly stamped visas crossing the lines. Underneath the Mediterranean mirror, boats assemble at Italy's coast, before Israel, out of Egypt and Spain, sharing stories, showing their bones, jellyfish floating silently by through their beams. One day, the divers, still jogging now on the beach, stretching their muscles and pumping their lungs, one day they'll plunge in and pass the corals, the gray fish on the surface, and find the box. Photographs, a crooked necklace, and shards of unknown origin. They will give signs underwater, two fingers rounded to form a circle, three fingers up like a jolly bird's tail. One of them may pick up a ring, a picture, and we will not see it again. In his shelf, stored at home, a souvenir from our travels under the world, to the underworld of other people's dreams.